Welcome to the American Society of Brewing Chemists Lab in a Fishbowl, session two, titratable acidity and pH. Real quick, a number of you were probably here earlier, but I want to mention again, this year the BA and ASBC are running a deal where if you haven't been an ASBC member in the last 3 years, we've got a discount code so you can become a member for just $99. Hell of a deal, considering all their great resources. Part of the reason we do this is we try not to duplicate the resources that we develop with our fellow brewing organizations. Not that we could, but one of the biggest requests we field as the BA is, I need a simple guide to know what I should be doing at certain volumes, certain production sizes as a brewery, from a lab perspective. And guess what? ASBC has that. And there's some in your chairs, there's some by the door, I'm sure they have some at the booth. This is a great resource, check this out. And also in your chairs and by the door and at their booth, you can find out more information about becoming an ASBC member, the promo code to take advantage of this promo that we're running this year. So please do that. Am I missing anything? ASBC folks. All right, cool. I'm going to spare everyone reading their bios because there's a lot of information to get to. I'm sure there'll be lots of questions. I will mention, at the end of the presentation, please, if you have a question, come find one of these microphones on either aisle. We are recording this, and we'd love everyone to be able to hear your questions so we don't have to repeat them, and we can answer as many as possible. So today we have Jeff Irby, quality analyst with New Belgium, as well as Justin Alexander, production processed chemist, also with New Belgium. And with that, I'm going to let them get to it. Thanks.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Justin. This is Jeff. We're going to be speaking to you guys about titratable acidity and pH today. Just a reminder for the ASBC, if you got your badge scanned already on your way out, you don't have to do it again this time. They'll get it to you. So this is kind of just a quick little outline. I'm not going to read all this to you guys. Basically, what this is showing, it's color-coordinated in the sense that we're going to start out with TA and pH. Why do we care? Why is it important? And then the next few slides are going to be strictly about pH, and then we're going to dive into TA. And then after that, we're going to kind of go over some sensory aspects. How do these two work synergistically together? And towards the end, we've got a couple slides, and we'll have some Q&A in case everybody has questions or anything like that. So the first slide here, TA and pH. The reason that we care is because pH is a measurement of only dissociated hydrogen ions. So TA is a measurement of dissociated and undissociated. So the reason that's important is sensorially, you taste both dissociated and undissociated. And the way the pH and TA measurements are affected is because during fermentation, depending on what your organisms of use are, you're producing organic acids, which are weak acids, so they don't dissociate completely, and then those are influenced by the anaerobic repressed growth of yeast. So let's go ahead and dive into pH. On your left part of the slide there, these are the method supplies. These are strictly taken from the ASBC methods. And all of these supplies we have up here. So I'd like to be able to point this camera at it, but I'm afraid I'll show it to you upside down. So what you're looking at here is we've got an auto titrator and then a pH probe. We've got our stir plate, and this is how we control the pH probe and record our readings. So what we're kind of looking at here on your right side are basically just definitions of pH, and what we're saying is that pH is a measurement of acidity, or the alkalinity of a solution. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the scale of pH, but we'll get into that on the next slide. So acidity is the tendency of a solution to supply hydrogen ions to a reaction. And the best way to think about that is going back to the organic acids that we mentioned earlier. So during fermentation, you're producing malic, lactic, acetic, citric, or you're adding those into solution by fruit additions or something like that. What we're doing here is we're trying to measure how we're affecting that solution. And the way that you measure that is pH is the negative log of hydrogen ions in solution. Okay, so pH scale, like I said, we'd kind of take a look at this. What you're looking at on the left side of your screen is, on the left side, you're reading pH from 7, which is a point of neutrality. So you've got an equal amount of hydrogen ions and hydroxide ions. So your water, basically your deionized water, is going to be 7. So as you go towards the left, your pH is getting lower, you're getting more acidic. As you go towards the right, your pH is going up, so you're getting more alkaline or basic. And so during the fermentation process, you know, you're kind of wondering how you're affecting change in pH and how that's important. So in your mash tun, you're adding water, so your water has a specific alkalinity or a specific acidity to it. It depends on where you're brewing, how your city is treating that water, and then what you're adding to your mash tun, what salts you're adding. So think of gypsum or calcium chloride, depending on if you're making, you know, hoppy beers, lagers. And then after you get through the mash tun, you're going to move to the boil kettle, and again, you're going to be adding salts. You might add food-grade lactic to bring your pH down to a point of 5.2, which is pretty common practice. Your hops, so your hop particulate, your hop matter, that's going to increase your pH based on the oils and resins. And as you boil it, you're going to be concentrating your solution. So you're going to be removing water, and after boiling, you're going to go through the fermentation stage. So you're going to get into yeast. You're going to be producing organic acids, and you're going to have release of hydrogen ions and fan, which free amine and nitrogen we'll talk a little bit more about just a few slides.
Want to switch to camera?
Yeah.
Real quick. So let's go through a quick probe calibration. I'm Jeff, by the way, if you couldn't figure that out. Chemists are born entertainers, just throwing that out there. we'll run through a quick calibration. This is a digital pH probe by the good folks at Hawk, and sensitivity down to plus or minus 0.02, so down to 200ths. Pretty sick stuff. So pretty straightforward. The method recommends a 3-point calibration using 4, 7, and 10 buffers. We do not do that. We do 4 and 7, which works just fine. Our boss doesn't allow us to get a new stir plate, so you're just going to have to wait for that one. Oh, hi, Dana. Justin's the smart one, if you guess.
Yes, I'm very smart.
So with all these setups we have here, we have a few different titrations, and I think we have a slide coming up, but just to kind of give you the rundown, this is from ASBC Brier 8. Burette stand, burette, digital pH probe, and a stir plate gets you pretty much there. Some buffers, some reagents and things, but not a whole lot more to it. We were doing a lot of these when we were looking in the beginning of our stainless sour program a few years back. So we upgraded and got the Hawk Auto titrator. That's a milk titrator originally, but works great as in grams of lactic acid per liter. And so we'll kind of do a double demonstration of how to run the burette titration versus the auto titrator. So slope 99%, anything above 92% is acceptable. So we are good to go to move forward.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned earlier that we've got two different setups here, simply just to show you how much more efficient an auto titrator can be. We know that the ASBC method is kind of describing a manual titration setup, which it works. Hopefully if all goes well, in the time that he's able to do that one titration, I can probably do these a couple times over.
Can you do the 50 mils of Ural, please? My AV skills are top-notch, so hang on. Yep. What did I do, Justin? It's just showing your screen, Sarah, but...
Sorry, guys.
Well, everybody knows that I'm a fan of The Office now.
So we added in this fishbone, and the ASBC has a great resource for these. You can get on the website. Greg Casey, when he was working at Coors for years and years and years, has got a lot of his own note-taking and methodology. And essentially, these are great for troubleshooting, root cause analysis type stuff. So if you're having troubles, there's literally every type of a situation that you could come across. Greg's encountered it. And so we threw this in here. This is actually from Dr. Bamforth's paper, where he boils down one of Greg's fish bones. And so you can kind of just quickly go through it. We're talking about wort buffering capacity, obviously salts, malt, all these things, high gravity brewing, dark malts, etc. So you can kind of see the pluses and minuses there. All these things are cofactors. You get into the yeast production, into the fermentation, like what Justin was talking about earlier. You can see, the more yeast growth, the better health you have. Generally speaking, you're going to go down in pH. Zinc's a cofactor also. That's another way to get your pH down. It's great for yeast health. So big growth, chomping up all the metabolites, and eating up the fan, and that's going to give us more organic acids throughout. And as Justin talked about, it's those organic acids that we're not necessarily measuring with TH, or with pH, sorry. Definitely not measuring it with TH. And so that's what makes TA important, is it gives us a more holistic view, more of an overhead view. Adjusting the wort pH with salts, you've got gypsum in here, calcium sulfate. Interaction with malt phosphates, bringing in more and more calcium. So all these things are part of the scene. highly encourage looking at fish bones if you're having an issue. Again, talking about the mash tun, we got enzyme activity. You got a lot of optimum pHs there. You pretty much have a range, and it's slightly debatable, but you know, 5.3 to 5.8 is going to catch most of those enzymes, depending on what type of beer you're wanting to make. Also, that salt ratio is important. You know, you can go 1 to 2, 1 to 3, calcium chloride versus gypsum. And you do run the risk of getting an unpleasant bitterness, but ultimately that can also pop your bitterness a little bit if you're making a real hoppy beer. So a lot of interplay with flavor and mouthfeel. Talked about the optimal pH. We're talking about, you know, attenuation, protein breakdown, viscosity, lautering performance, fan versus soluble nitrogen, free amino nitrogen. High pH and leads to darker color, more astringency, etc. Acidifying your sparge water can prevent some further extraction of heavier molecules, polyphenols. So that's something that you can use as a control factor as well. Just kind of a rundown of boiling, you know, obviously salts, wort clarification, hop utilization, right? We're going to get more isomerization as that pH goes up. Lower gravity worts are generally higher in pH prior to boiling, but they do drop further. And you're going to see about a 0.3 unit drop here. Not as much as in fermentation, but a pretty good drop. Obviously, this interplays with your water chemistry. We're kind of blessed a little bit in Fort Collins. We have great water, and so it allows us to make multiple different beer styles with varying salt concentrations. Kettle fining, excuse me. The idea is just, you know, if your wort gets below a certain pH level, you're not really going to be able to fine, regardless of agents or whatnot. So you want to make sure you're in that optimal range. And then dimethyl sulfide, a shift in a lower wort pH can actually slow the reduction of dimethyl sulfoxide to dimethyl sulfide in fermentation. So there are some yeast out there that will make that reduction, and where you may have blown off all your DMS in the kettle, you're not blowing it off in fermentation. You're going to be accumulating, so that can be a bad scene if you're not prepared for that. In primary fermentation, we're going to see the big drop, right? This is where all the activity is happening. Those metabolites are being eaten up. We're producing organic acids. So optimizing that pH will also help with your VDK reduction. Alpha-acetolactate to diacetyl conversion, keep the pH low, happy stuff. a rise in pH at the end of fermentation is bad news. Rob and Kelly kind of touched on that with some of the hoppier stuff. If you get into an autolysis situation, your pH is going to rise. Acetaldehyde, some other terrible things can happen. So very important as you move forward through fermentation. You want to make sure you've got healthy yeast all the way until you're crashing it out. for the finished product, I'm going to skip over the end because I don't like that. For the finished product, we're talking about a lower pH resulting in improved microbial stability, physical stability, foam stability, though it can have a negative impact on flavor stability and the quality of perceived bitterness. So tons of different things that can be happening there just dependent on pH. Big time control point.
So I was going to start this off with a joke about what happens when you put two chemists who don't give presentations up on a stage to give a presentation. This is it. So hopefully I do better this time around. So titratable acidity, again, on your left side of the screen, we have the list of method supplies. So you're talking about your reagents, your buffers, 4, 7, 10. Like Jeff said, we don't use 10. 4 and 7 do a pretty good job of getting the accuracy that we need for what we're doing in beer. your sodium hydroxide. So this method lists 0.1 molar, and the CAS number is there if you guys need to order it and decide that you would like to start looking into sours or titratable acidity of your beers, maybe if you're fruiting beers. And then the apparatus, so we've got the commercial pH meter, which is here. So Jeff's got the bulb immersed in our filtrate. So on the right side of the tables here, we've got three different beers filtered. And the idea here is hopefully that we can show you guys how these things are different. We have a specialty sour, so this is one of our lambic, or our creek that's mixed lambic and some fooder aged. And then Mural, which is a lactic addition on the hot side, and we add fruit during fermentation. And then Fat Tire, which I'm sure most of you have heard of, which is just a normal process. And the idea behind that is just to kind of give you an idea of what kind of TA you should expect. So maybe if you think you have some sort of contamination, you can do a titration or, more importantly, check your pH to see if something is off. sorry. And I mentioned it before, but the reason titratable acidity is important, so if you are making something sour, you taste both dissociated and undissociated hydrogen ions. So pH is only measuring dissociated, so keep that in mind. And what you're doing in this method is you're titrating your beer with this base up to a pH of 8.2, which is the, as you can probably read, it's the level at which neutralization of the acid occurs. at the bottom of the slide, on the right-hand side, you'll see that we say TA can be used as a critical control point. So what we mean by that is during your souring stages, if you are having any sort of oxygen ingress, especially excessive, that ratio between lactic and acetic is going to get smaller and smaller. So in the end, you're kind of starting to produce vinegar as opposed to delicious sour beer. I know you guys can't see these quite well from down there, so we went ahead and just took some photos for your pleasure. So what we're going to do now is we're going to, Jeff's going to titrate with the manual titration setup, and in the method it says to start out titrating or introducing 1.5 milliliter increments each time. And so once you get to 7.6 pH, you're going to want to slow it down because the buffering capacity of your filtrate is going to decrease the further you get up there, and ask us some questions later and we can dive into that, but that's a little bit too dense for right now, I think. But and while he's doing that, I'm going to use the auto titrator, and I don't know what I'll do when I'm done. Maybe I'll clap or something, but hopefully I'll be done with these and maybe even pipette more before he gets done with that.
All right, I need a head start, so I'm going. A couple caveats here with the burette. You definitely don't need any air bubbles below the stopcock or really anywhere. They're going to travel up to the top. If they're above that, below, not ideal. So you want to make sure that you've got liquid all the way through, and you're going to blot around that burette tip. We're using a 0.1 molar sodium hydroxide for this one. A little bit about the method, actually, real quick. the 0.1 molar sodium hydroxide, if you're looking at really, kettle, wood sour, really sour stuff, you're going to go through four or five of these. So one thing you can do is you can up the concentration strength. You will lose a little bit of sensitivity, but you can go up to a 0.2 or a 0.4 molar. It's just simple math. The equation in beer aid is pretty straightforward. You've got, C1, V1, C2, V2, and then, plugging in your different concentration. specific gravities in there, which in beer is roughly one for for this, so that's not a huge part of this, but I'm going to go ahead and get started and start titrating. And then just, I'm trying to put this in the back so you guys can see it, but it's really awkward for me, so we'll work through this. But essentially, instead of trying to get the stopcock to open position and then closing it, I prefer a turn. And depending on where you're at in the titration is how fast you want to make that turn. So the endpoint's going to go quick once you get close to it. So what Justin alluded to is we'll go 1.5 mils or so, maybe 2, maybe 3 in the very beginning. But once you get closer to the end, you can blow right through the titration if you're not careful, the endpoint. So we're starting off with 3.55. And it's a waiting game, you know? You're just keeping an eye on it as you go down. And we're going to try to get to a pH of 8.2 as our end point. And one of the reasons we're using this particular beer is you should see the end point from your vantage point as well. So you can see it kind of jumps up. Once it stirs in, it'll oscillate a little bit, but kind of come back down a little bit. So you're constantly watching that as you're going forward. How's everybody doing tonight? Just kidding. Filler. Told you, chemist, man. So we do have a 25 mil burette. You can use a 50. I don't see why not. Are you already beating me?
Oh yeah.
Oh man. I'm gonna have to speed it up. Wait for it. So we're creeping up there. We're definitely seeing a color change in the beer. So that's another way, you know, if you're titrating the same beer over and over, you can kind of get your head around that color change. Let you know a little bit more about the endpoint. And so we're creeping up there, so I'm going to take it easy a little bit. And now you know why we got the auto titrator.
Okay, so I'm done auto-titrating those three different samples that I had there. So we'll kind of get to a slide here in a second where we show you the calculation that goes into this. But there are just a couple things that you can alter within that calculation to maybe speed up your analysis. There's going to be sacrifices here and there, and like I said, I'll probably talk about that when you guys can actually visualize the calculation as opposed to me trying to put it in midair. But the reason that I was able to do this so much faster than Jeff is able to do that one sample is not because I'm a better chemist. He's definitely a better chemist. But is because my sodium hydroxide solution concentration is 4 times as strong. So what that means is I need less beer and less sodium hydroxide to reach my endpoint titration. And then what I'm going to sacrifice in that is sensitivity. So, you know, take all of these things into consideration, especially if you plan on producing sours or fruited beers. The reason you might want to do something like that, and I think Jeff touched on this already, but you know, how sour is your beer? That's really important to know exactly what kind of concentration you want to use, because if we were to titrate 50 milliliters of this Transatlantic Creek, it would probably take, well, four times the amount plus, or times five. So 20 times more total volume of a titration vessel. So let's say this takes him 50 mils. You know, you're getting up there for sure. So it's kind of wasteful in the scheme of things, which is why we don't tend to do it that way. How many mils did you get there, Jeff?
Well, I blew through the endpoint, Justin, so I'm glad you brought that up. However,
all right, so we should make him
it's
do
about
it again.
19.6.
19.6, all right.
Let's move on, shall we? So these are those method considerations that we were talking about. Pretty straightforward calculation. The interesting thing is that you can, you know, kind of back calculate your other organic acids here. So that's one of the key points, is that we want that full acidity picture. We didn't say it, but all these things should be done at 20 C. Right? You don't want to be worrying about temperature fluctuations when you're trying to, you know, do your titrations.
Yeah, there was a question earlier for Rob and Kelly if temperature mattered for the samples. They answered no. Chemistry is just a little bit better than micro, so we like to say that we have more control points.
This is our first time doing this presentation. just kidding. So we want to calibrate the meter every day. You know, you don't want to use expired standards or keep reusing the same standards. Fresh standards is always better. Always keep your probes in storage solution. Never leave them out dry.
Or leave them in the titration vessels.
Or leave them in old storage solution. And so we kind of threw some data and some observations together here. And this is some data from our barrel age program, which has been around a long time, and so we got a lot of different cultures, a lot of different sized barrels, tons of different fooders, a lot of different environments for those guys out there in the souring area. So we have a rapid drop in pH. As soon as we bring new beer in to these fooders, it's going to just really drop in pH. However, your organic acids are going to build up over time. So that's where you see that rapid decline and then kind of a tailing out there of the pH. And then sort of a stepwise graph there for TA percentage. If you'll notice, at about 4 to 6 months, you're pretty sour. And it really doesn't get a whole lot more sour after that. And so that's where, you know, you can have something like if you're blending young beer with old beer, etc., that's kind of the game you play there as far as getting your ideal TA percentage. You know, some observations that we had was were that new wood stabilizes both pH and TA percentage at an earlier point than conditioned wood does. You know, your culture is going to play into that. Surface area in the barrel. You know, how much invagination do you have in those oak staves? How much proliferation do you have in that culture? All those things are going to matter. We also see, obviously, if we're putting in a base beer into a sour vessel with a really high free amino nitrogen load, we're going to see even more sour levels. And so that's something to consider as a way to temper that sour or, you know, just max it out for the full pucker. In new wood versus old wood, we have different rates of acidification. We have different rates of acidification in every single barrel that we have out there, literally. And I think we have 66 of them now, various sizes. a couple of American oak, some French oak, etc. So some older vessels versus younger vessels, all these things play into the terroir of those vessels, all right?
So with the experiment that you guys just saw us do, Jeff got 19.8, you said, something
yeah,
like that, mils.
Yeah.
So I just did the quick calculation. I didn't have to do it for the auto titrator because that method's already built in there, so we can figure out exactly what our percent lactic is. You can report your titrations in grams per liter or, let's see, your mils of 1 molar alkali per 100 grams of beer. We like to just say what percent lactic it is. It's a little bit easier of a language to understand across each department. So he got 0.36% lactic, and I got 0.35% lactic. And the reason for that difference, you know, my volume was less. It was a fifth of that. And then my concentration of sodium hydroxide, my titration solution, was way more concentrated. So I lost that sensitivity, whereas Jeff got the more accurate measurement. So, again, weigh your options there. You know, what's more important to you, accuracy or throughput?
Yeah, or how sour your sample is, right? You know, there's mixed cultures out in the sour vessels. We're looking at malic, lactic, acetic, citric, succinic, etc. All these things are generated by the pyruvic. So as the yeast are taking that up, TCA cycle, organic acids. All right. So common lacto cultures for stainless sours. So we're kind of shifting gears a little bit. We're getting out of the wood. We're talking about stainless. We have a few of our graphs there showing some of acidification rates that we had in stainless. So where we were looking at 6 months before, now we're looking at 48 hours. And for us, you know, if we're pitching X amount of volume out, then we got to feed that culture and bring it back in. You don't want to pull out more than 60% of that volume. There's not going to be enough food to sustain that high level of TA percentage. Now, some of these, you know, organisms will put off some pretty gnarly off flavors. So a lower inclusion rate or a pure culture, so a homolactic fermentative culture.
Oh, nailed made it.
It's a lot more ideal because you're talking about producing lactic acid only instead of, you know, other things, ethanol, CO2, acetic acid, other metabolic constituents. So yeah, again, off flavors, and then rate of acidification, real important here, because we want to have really sour stream that we're going to blend into whatever other type of beer that we're going to try to make. The folks at Lallemand have a really nice clean sour for that. And then Justin ran some experiments, so you want to talk about it?
Sure.
All right.
So this slide is really kind of to show you guys the difference in how you might acidify your wort or your fermentations. So sample A, and on the bottom there you can see exactly what kind of beer this was. I'm not going to give brand names out or anything like that, but sample A, you've got a beer that has a food grade lactic addition on the hot side that receives fruit additions during fermentation. Might sound familiar, but what I'm trying to show you guys here is that these pHs are pretty vastly different. I know 3.35 and 3.25 are only 0.1 different, but that's still a very large difference. If you think back to that scale that we saw earlier, that's a tenfold. So if you were to think of it in terms of diacetyl concentration, if you were at 50 parts per billion and you went to 500, it's a pretty big deal, right? So that's why pH is so important to be as accurate as possible whenever you use this as a critical control point. Sample B, you've got lambic and mature fooder-aged beer blended, and then sample C is strictly the stainless sour that Jeff was just talking about. So each of these, your pH is extremely different. Your titratable acidity pretty different between A and B and C, but B and C are a little bit closer together, and What we've done is we've taken that calculation from the TA method slide, and we've back calculated each of those individual organic acids, just to show you guys, you know, what your culture you use, what yeast strains, what bacteria, how they acidify differently. And we'll see this slide again in a little bit, but as a reminder, on the top left of that slide, you can see the factors there. And then this is a slide of wood-aged sours. So sample D, you've got a dark-colored lager with a lower amount of fan in fermentation. And you can see that the pH between all of these were relatively close. But again, it's still a pretty big difference. The titratable acidity is very different. And if you look at your individual acids, E and F are pretty close. D and E are different. And the reason for that, if you look a little closer, samples D and E, you see that sample E is a little bit higher in titratable acidity, your pH is lower, and you've got a higher concentration of lactic, acetic, malic, and citric. And the reason for that is sample E is it's another lager, but it's got a higher concentration of fan in the base beer. So with that, as Jeff has talked about a couple times, more fan equals more organic acid. So more organic acid, lower pH, higher percent TA, more sour. Sample F is a blend of these two here that you can see. And so this slide is it's a little bit dense, and I'll try to explain it as best I can. What we did is we took all six of those beers, and if you think back to the TA versus pH, there is a general rule of thumb that the higher percent TA, the lower pH, the more acidic the solution is, the more perceived sour you're going to get in sensory. So on the top, you see the six columns. That's pH. And those are samples that are ordered in the order of decreasing pH. So least sour to most sour towards the right. The bottom of those columns have a number, a ranking of 1 through 6, 1 being the least perceived sour and 6 being the most sour. So again, what we're trying to show you guys is the far left, the higher pH samples, those are the least perceived sour, the far right, the most perceived sour. And the idea behind that is that you're not always going to get perceived sour to be the highest with the highest percent lactic or the lowest pH. There's going to be different synergistic effects within your matrix that are going to affect the way you perceive something sensorially. So definitely important to keep that in mind whenever you are producing stainless sour or fooder aged sour, wood aged sours, it's important to taste that as you go, not just to let it go and then once you see that percent TA, go, all right, it's good, we're where we want to be. And then the bottom portion of this slide with the bar charts, again, it's right to left, increase in percent TA, so the far left is going to be the highest amount of acid in solution. Definitely not the most perceived sour, so sample F was. And again, this just goes back to the matrix. You're going to perceive these things differently. Let's see. I think we're good there. What time do we got? Yeah?
Sure. Yeah. Going further?
Yeah.
Another thing we like to kill ourselves with at New Belgium is this organic acids method on the UPLC. This is liquid chromatography separation with UV vis detection. This is just another way to validate some of the findings that we've had in the past. We use this data to monitor acidification rates in all of our sour production, so the wood aged sour, stainless, whatever, fruit beers especially, when you want to look at malic acid when it has more of a harsh like bitter, more of a kind of metallic-y kind of biting bitter versus a smooth lactic acidity. So we wanted to kind of dive further into that. So you can see we get malic, lactic, acetic, citric, and succinic in this method. And so Justin did some comparisons. And I think the big takeaway in the comparisons is that the lactic matches up with the beer 8 method pretty darn well. Acetic, malic, and citric, I think, you know, depending on the matrix, it's a little bit tougher for the beer 8 method to pick up that nuance, but just going, you know, going through these A, B, and C, they're pretty solid for lactic. Another thing that we're going to look at is that lactic to acetic ratio. And so we chart that as a critical control point with statistical process, wanting to know how much oxygen ingress that we might have in one of these transfers, whether it be in wood-aged beer or sour stainless. You know, like if you're drinking something in Belgium, that lactic to acetic ratio is going to be lower. There's going to be a lot more acetic in there. It's a lot more true to style than really what we're trying to produce. So that's something that one way that we look at and make sure that the health of the transfers and things in the wood cellar are on point.
So I wanted to point out on this slide, there's a reference to Dr. Bamforth's paper there towards the bottom. We're kind of just scratching the surface of pH. There's a lot that can go into it, and it was tough to decide what was important enough to bring up to you guys here. So if you get a chance and you can find that paper, definitely read it because it's very good. We've got just a slide here. Just wanted to say a quick thank you to a few people who helped us out with these slides just to make sure we got to where we were going. Definitely a big thank you to the Brewers Association, the ASBC as well, for giving us the opportunity to be up here and present to you guys and hopefully help your quality programs grow. This is your battle.
some events coming up with ASBC, and then I'll be out in Virginia for that quality course. And just so you know, we did pull a good amount of information from a deep dive into quality, some of those slides from last year's course. So I do highly recommend it. It's a great course, all encompassing with, you know, just about everything you need to deal with at your brewery. The methods of analysis, the fish bones, et cetera. And then, yeah, you got it, man.
Yeah, this is just a reminder, code 3172. If you guys decide that the ASBC is something you want to help build your quality programs, the $99 is a pretty killer deal. So, and if you are a new member or have not been a member for the last 3 years, be sure to stop by booth 9104 in the next couple days and go ahead and sign up, and you'll get that sweet Beer Geek t-shirt.
Yeah, and we'll be in the booth on and off for the next couple days, so if anybody has some beers that they want to say, oh, I really want to know what the TA of this beer is, come on by and we'll check it out for you.
Yeah, bring us a sample. We can run it, we can talk about it. Like I said, we just scratched the surface, so if you have questions, microphones, or come see us.
Question for you about the manual. Can you hear me? The manual process for TA. If you know in general you're always going to be adding somewhere in the 15 to 20 mils range, since your pH meter measured pretty accurately and quickly, mm-hmm. and a lot of us are using crappier pH meters that maybe take 45 seconds to register accurately,
yeah.
is there any harm in just dumping 10 mils in and starting from there? You know, like, will it invalidate the test at all?
Yeah, I mean, you saw me blow right through the endpoint, right?
Yeah. So,
I would say, we're not doing these every day. It's not like these guys. We're definitely not doing TAs all the time. But I would just say, once you get comfortable with that liquid, and you've done it enough times, absolutely. Like during those kettle sour studies, I could tell you within a few mils of where it was going to end up.
So there's no harm in just giving yourself a little bit of a head start there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, a few trial and error, and then once you get an idea, then you can let the Brett drop, you know, 10, 15 mils at a time in the beginning.
Thank you.
Yeah,
with that in mind, if you're using a lot of hydroxide, your 1 molar, 0.1 molar, up your concentration.
Yeah.
You'll save yourself some time and some loss of volume, too.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you.
I guess I had a question as well, and that's on the kettle sour slide. You had the three different samples that you had.
Yeah.
And it was talking about temperature and strains of lacto. And I just didn't know if you had none of the graphs here give us any of the results as far as like what was optimal temperature. Do you have any of that information to share?
Yeah, so optimal temperature, you know, if you're talking about 45 to 47 C, proliferation is going to be down in the lower 40s, but we're really looking for big time growth and acidification, right? We're looking for metabolism. So it's more in the 47 is optimal. And that will probably depend on what strain you're using. Or your conditions, you know, higher gravity work, is there more food versus less food?
Right.
All those things, I think, kind of play into that. But yeah, 47C, and then just realize if you're pulling volume out to pitch into something else, you don't want to take more than 60% of that volume. Because you need that culture to be really nice and happy before you refeed it.
And so is that respectively as far as the lactic bacteria strands on the kettle sour graphs?
The graphs are not the organisms.
Number two, three, the bacteria.
Yeah, we have our own organism in house.
Okay.
And so it's not any of those. Those are just common lactobacillus cultures that you could use.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, of course.
Hello.
Hi.
I've always thought that the TA percent is like total TA, but then when I was looking at your slides and with the conversion or the conversion factor for the different specific acids, they don't add up to what the percent TA is. So then I'm wondering, what's that relationship there if they don't add up?
So you're talking about the factors on the right side?
Yeah, and then with the other slides that you guys had showing kind of differences between,
Yeah, sorry.
Other way.
It's my first time using a PowerPoint.
And so I noticed, so with titratable acidity, say for sample D, it's 1.31. Oh, yeah. Wait, stop it. 1.31. And then if you add up all the percentages of your lactic, acetic, malic, citric, I mean, it doesn't add up.
So
as like total TA. So
yeah.
How are those interacting, and what's the relationship there?
If you go back to the TA slide that had the calculations on it for me,
which one?
What it is, and I kind of got caught off guard by this as well, because I was like, factors, you know, like, shouldn't this add? But what it is equation C, and I can kind of read it to you a little bit too. The correction table is, sorry, I have the answer to that one. Basically, it goes into the molecular weight of that acid. So lactic is 90 grams per mole. So it's not necessarily 0.9, you know, that would be simple. But it's the molecular weight of each of those acids. And then that's going to be your equation C. So you're going to take your concentration 2 from equation B, multiply that by your correction factor. And that's going to give you your result in grams per liter. And then from there, if you want to figure out what percent acid it is like we do, you'll just take that, divide that by 10, you'll get what percent malic, what percent lactic. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, sweet. Yeah. Any other questions? Cool. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week at CBC.